We're 5 weeks into this Exodus story, and the Israelites are still enslaved. But today, I am happy to inform you, they're going to almost, sort of, at least make the plan to get out. You see, Moses is back in Egypt after being called by God to lead the Israelites out of Pharaoh's rule. He's got the orders from God on what to do and what to say. He's practiced in the mirror and done his centering exercises so that he's ready to face Pharaoh head on. When the time comes, Moses goes to Pharaoh as the mouthpiece of God and demands, "Let my people go." In a completely not surprising turn of events, Pharaoh says, "No. Don't know your God. Don't care. They're not going anywhere." Moses has been gone for a while now, but Pharaoh is still ruthless as ever. Thus begins the plagues. Maybe you've heard of them. Plagues to try and force Pharaoh's hand to release the Israelites. God begins by turning all the water in Egypt to blood. After this, Moses goes to Pharaoh, says, "Let my people go." Pharaoh does not concede. So God turns to animals. Plagues of frogs, gnats, flies, consuming the land. Moses goes to Pharaoh again, says, "Let my people go." Pharaoh still doesn't relent. Then it gets a little more serious. Plagues that involve killing all of Egypt's livestock, boils on people's skin, thunder and hail that killed everything that wasn't already dead, locusts, and then a plague of perpetual darkness. Each time Moses goes to Pharaoh and pleads with him, "Let my people go." And each time, Pharaoh's heart is hardened a little more, resistant to their freedom. It didn't matter how much of Egypt was being destroyed, how much of his kingdom was being rampaged by weather and animals and death. Pharaoh was defiant. The Israelites, God's people, would not be freed. So, after 9 attempts, after 9 plagues that didn't work, and 9 pleadings from Moses to Pharaoh, God changed God's tactic, because the God of Israel is even more relentless than Pharaoh. This time, the 10th time, God gives the Israelites a meal of lamb, with sides of unleavened bread and bitter herbs that the Israelites were to eat quickly and already dressed for travel, because during this meal, God would send the 10th and final plague over Egypt, a plague that would kill all the firstborns under Pharaoh's rule. To avoid this awful fate, God told the Israelites to take the blood from the lamb that they were eating at dinner and put it over their doorposts, so that as God came over the land that night, God would pass over their house, keeping them alive until God came back to lead them out of Egypt. And this is what happened. Just as God had planned. At midnight, the plague came and a loud cry spread throughout Egypt. Pharaoh called in Moses and finally caved, pleading for the Israelites to leave. And in the night, God's people went on their way with full stomachs and unleavened bread in hand, following the lead of a man they barely know and a God who they are trusting with their lives. Now, as you heard Pastor Freeman read it, there are a lot of details in this story. There are a lot of details about this Passover meal, details that are filled with meaning and intentionality, especially for our Jewish siblings who still celebrate it every spring. From how to cook the food, to what to wear, to what to do with the leftovers, God had everything in mind when God told them how to participate in this meal. Now, I'm not going to go through all of the details with you and what they mean. That's not what a sermon is for. But I do want to highlight one particular one. God told them to take the blood of the lamb that they ate at dinner and smear it over their doorposts. This is a striking image. Honestly, it's gross. If we saw blood on someone's house in the neighborhood, we would call the police and assume that someone was murdered. I'm imagining this little neighborhood of Israelites in Egypt looking a lot like a really bad crime scene. This is a lot of blood on people's homes. And blood is not something we want to see, because if we're seeing blood, we're seeing harm, suffering, disease, death. From a scrape on the playground to a serious surgery, seeing blood tells us that something bad has happened. Something is wrong. And our evolutionary instincts kick in. We are threatened, we become afraid, and we take extra precautions to protect ourselves from it. We wear gloves, we sanitize everything, we work really hard when someone is bleeding to stop the flow so that the blood stays in the body as much as possible, because in the body is where the blood is supposed to be. That's how it keeps us alive. It's not supposed to be smeared over our front doors. That's not a good sign. But God doesn't see the blood in that way. God is not afraid of the blood or threatened by what it means, just as God is not afraid or threatened by Pharaoh. Rather, as the 10th plague falls upon Egypt, God will see the blood as a sign of life, a sign of the life of the people inside the house, a sign of the life of God's people who are dependent on God to see through with what God has promised, a sign of the life that will come for God's people somewhere, somehow, far away from this land that has only brought them death, a sign of life that only God can give them. God told the Israelites to gather together to share a meal under the blood of the lamb. They were to gather here amidst the death and destruction that was happening across Egypt and trust that the blood of the Lamb would protect them, would shield them, would be the sign that would actually give them life. Friends, this is what we do too. We gather here each week in this space, under a cross. The cross where our God spilled God's own blood of the Lamb, where the blood flowed and the death came. This is a symbol of death. This is a form of execution. But like the Israelites, we gather under this symbol of death because we know that it is through this that God has offered us life. We know that God has turned this into life, that this is our protection, this is our shield. And we know that when we gather under the cross amidst all the death and destruction that is happening around us in our world, we can trust in a God who turns death into life. And even more, we can trust in a God who overcame death so that we could have life, eternal life, life where death does not have the final say, life where Pharaoh and Egypt no longer have a hold on us. This is the promise of the blood of the Lamb on the doorposts, and it is the promise of the cross. That what we see as death, God turns into life, and then God gives us that life, leads us to that life, so that we may never be bound to Pharaoh and Egypt and death ever again. This is the promise we cling to every day, but especially we remember it on days like today, on All Saints Sunday. Unfortunately, death does not pass over our doorposts. It lingers, it gets close, and it always comes. But the Passover meal and the cross of Christ remind us that death does not have the final say. Because God is more relentless than Pharaoh, and God is more powerful than death, and life has been given in abundance to God's people, even when it doesn't look like it. Today, we gather under our doorposts, under the shadow of the cross, under a symbol of death, and we boldly proclaim God's promise of life. Life for the saints who died too early. Life for the saints who have been gone too long. Life for the saints who were killed unjustly. For the saints who changed our lives. For the saints we love so much it hurts. They may have died, but in their death, they have been given life, and life in abundance. And so have we. Thanks be to God.